I like to use this music every once in a while. I mean, it's as good as the other one. Hi, everybody. This is Al Ross, and it's time for Spectrum West, the program about the arts and culture of West Wisconsin. Coming up today, we have a little of it all. I mean, we're talking with blues harp or harmonica legend Corky Siegel, coming to Ladysmith in a bit over a week with chamber blues, a very unique combination of musical stuff. We have a report on the opening of the new UW River Falls, not new, but the UW River Falls Planetarium for public demonstrations. That's new. And those are on the first Monday of each month to get you through the winter with amazing technology for the entire family. The Eau Claire Children's Theater presents Jekyll and Hyde, the musical, and Jim Oliver covers all the details with director Wayne Merrick. Mr. Oliver also provides a look today at what's on stage at theaters all across West Wisconsin. And to kick off this chapter of your Spectrum West, an expo in Eau Claire has become an anticipated annual event because the craft has grown in popularity, with those engaged in the process as well as those who enjoy watching the process and purchasing the results. Next weekend, it's the 6th Wood Turning Expo, called Expressions in Wood in Eau Claire, featuring wood turners from all over West Wisconsin, as well as distinguished craftsmen traveling to demonstrate their skill. Keith Jones is a member of the Chippewa Valley Wood Turners Guild, and Tim Heil is a notable wood turner planning on making the trip from Gem Lake, Minnesota. Well, Keith, let's start with you. The expo, it's a bit more than last year. You have some new things, and you just informed me that there's a new thing coming that I don't even know about, so you're going to drop a bomb on us.
That's right.
So what are the new things? I know you have carvers coming this year.
That's correct. We have the West Wisconsin Wood Carvers joining us, and they'll have some demos, and they'll be in the main room, and they'll be doing some demos in there as well as the organized demos. And in addition to that...
Uh-oh. I wish I had a drum roll. I don't.
We have a gentleman coming from La Crosse, and he turns flutes.
Get out of here.
He's done this for quite a while, and they called and asked us if they could work him in some way, and he will be in a booth, and he'll be turning wood flutes. I still don't know yet whether he actually plays them when he's through, but we will find out.
I hope he sells them.
That could be.
So, Tim, have you ever made a flute?
I haven't made a flute, but, you know, the last... club demonstration we had, which it's a monthly club meeting, the fellow that did our club demo had made 600 flutes, and that's what he demonstrated. That was the first time I'd heard it, and now I'm hearing it a second time from Keith. So there's a variety of things out there that people turn on lathes.
Mm-hmm. Well, allow me to introduce Tim Heil a little bit by virtue of a little brief bio. He was introduced to wood turning in junior high school, and I won't tell you the year. He enjoys turning and using functional pieces. He's an active member, get this, of the Minnesota Wood Turners and the American Association of Wood Turners. He's demonstrated at the AAW National Symposium, the Utah Wood Turners Symposium, the American Craft Council Show, and the AAW Gallery of Wood Art. You've been featured, your work has anyway, in American Woodworker, Fine Woodworking and American Wood Turner. Those are magazines, I take it, yeah?
Yes.
And I've seen some of the stuff that you produce on your website, paintbrush handles and fishing lures, rolling pins, pool balls. I thought that was kind of cool. Jewelry, doorknobs, spindles. Of course, what wood turner doesn't do? I've even done a spindle, never went anywhere. Candle holders, all handles. Tim, tell us, because you make things large and small, what's easier, large items or small items?
That's a good question. You know, small items, I think, are harder because they're looked at more closely, I think, and there's just much more detail it takes to make them interesting. In fact, the wood turning shirt that I wear to our club meetings, I turn the buttons for that shirt.
No kidding.
Yeah, those are fun personal things that, you know, that you can make for yourself or friends that you can use and just enjoy.
When I conceived that question, though, I was imagining a wood turner doing a small item and, you know, having it just break, snap. I can see that with a button. Is there a lot of cussing going on when you make small items?
There's a lot of effort and a lot of detail to make small things.
Okay.
Yes. And they don't quite get the glamour that the big wood bowl would get or other large objects, you know, that you would just see and jump out at you more.
Mm-hmm. Some of what you make now is functional, you know, rolling pins and that kind of thing. That does, to me, add somewhat of a component. It's not just pretty to look at, but it has to work at its task. So is there a little bit of engineering involved, not just art in something that's functional?
I think there's a lot of engineering, and you made a good point. If it's interesting and functional, it does two things. If it's just a piece of sculpture, it doesn't necessarily function other than you can enjoy having it. But you have a beautiful rolling pin and you can use it. And when you're not using it, put it on display and enjoy it that way. It serves two good functions.
Keith, last year Learn to Turn was popular. What's planned for this year?
We will be doing Learn to Turn again this year. I think we turned about 100 pins last year with the people that stopped by. This year we've added the wood carvers, and they will be doing carving apples. That is all free for anyone that comes. They get to take the pin home and the apple home.
Well, there you go. See, bigger and better this year. Tim, back to you. You often appear in front of rather large groups of interested people. I saw pictures of you doing demos. I pictured it and imagined it as sort of like a musician sharing his songs. Take me back to the first time you did that. What you do is so precise and meticulous. Were you a little nervous? How did you keep the hands from quivering when you were in front of your first big group?
I feel pretty comfortable wood turning, so it's just kind of flows naturally to be in a group of other wood turners. There's great camaraderie, and typically the group is really interested in learning more about wood turning and getting ideas of things they can make. So, knowing those things, it's much easier. There's a real camaraderie among wood turners.
Mm-hmm. We reached you at your job, your real job. How many hours a week are you able to devote to turning wood?
I spend a couple hours every day turning or something related to it, either getting wood, making plans, taking pictures of things I've made, that type of thing.
What percentage of things that you make are original? Or do you leaf through magazines and say, I could do that?
I just wrote an article, actually, in Wood Turning Magazine about ideas. And for me, I can go to the hardware store and look at things there and get lots of ideas. I made a series of doorknobs for my house.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw a variety of different kinds of doorknobs at the hardware store, I thought, I can use a variety of woods, variety of designs, and make those objects. So, that's a good source of ideas. Just other things around me, day-to-day things. I make a lot of tool handles. I've made 2,000 screwdrivers with wood handles and give those to people at demonstrations and friends. It's kind of my calling card.
Cool.
Each one is unique. Each one's different. I don't intentionally make them different, but because the wood's different and just my thoughts are different at the time, I tend to make different shapes. I mean, they all have a certain continuity to them. They're functional. I've made screwdrivers out of 40 different kinds of wood.
Now that you at the expo are having turners and carvers, I mean, I can imagine you turning something and then handing it to a carver and saying, okay, I made this shape. You add some artwork to it. Have you worked with a carver before?
I have, actually. I've had a friend who worked at a woodcraft retail store. I gave him some blanks that I had partially turned, and he carved some animals on tool handles for me. And he kept some of those. I kept some. And, in fact, I'll bring them to the expo, and we'll put them on exhibit there.
Cool. What are you going to be turning at the expo? You have something in particular, or are you going to be doing a lot of different stuff?
I'm doing 5 demos. The first demo just revolves around kind of the 6 most common tools that a wood turner would use. I'll just do examples of different cuts with those 6 different tools. Another demo is on finishes. Polyurethane, wax, oil, and decoration on the finishes or as part of the finish. I'll do one on making screwdrivers, a couple different style screwdrivers. So, yeah, just a variety of things I think that generally people will be interested in and get some ideas from.
In the studio with us, Keith Jones. He's with the Chippewa Valley Wood Turners Guild. They're coupling with the West Wisconsin Wood Carvers Guild to put on the 6th Expressions in Wood Expo. And that's coming up next weekend, Saturday and Sunday, October 25th. And 26th on the phone, Tim Heil. He's from Minnesota, and he's one of the demonstrators. Keith Jones, tell us more about the expo. What are some of the amenities? Can I eat? I know admission is reasonable. It's only $5.
$5.
That's pretty good.
Right. Yeah. We plan on having some food available, yes. And also you have the restaurant at the hotel.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So you can go in there anytime and get something to eat. We're talking about having popcorn.
Nothing like the smell of popcorn.
Nothing like the smell of popcorn.
Mixed with wood.
Mixed with wood.
Mixed with the smell of wood being turned and carved. So the hours Saturday are what?
8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday and 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday.
And this is Saturday and Sunday, October 25th and 26th. Tim, of course, is not the only demonstrator. You have quite an arrangement for both days.
Right. We have a fellow coming from Colorado named Alan Jensen. 2 people from our local club. We have Bob Betcher. I'm sure that Tim knows him. And be giving some demos.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think he has 1 each day.
Cool.
We have 2 of the carvers who also be giving some demos in our demonstration area and also out in the general area. Wayne DeBerkey from Eau Claire, Dale Bronberger from Eau Claire.
Tim, is there anything out there that you've wanted to make that you haven't yet, kind of on your bucket list, is either really big or really small?
Well, we've had a goal, a friend of mine that is also a wood turner, to turn the heaviest top, heaviest spinning top. The last record has to spin for 20 seconds, and the record is about 160 pounds.
Wow.
So we've had that on the drawing board for a while. We think we can turn a top, hollow it out, pour a lead shot in the inside, seal the top up, and then spin it and exceed that weight of 150 plus pounds to get the world record. So that's currently what we're thinking about.
How are you going to spin it?
Well, it can only be spun by one person. You wrap a rope around the top,
sure.
You hold the top at the top, and you pull the rope, and that gets the gyration going. It's got to stay up for 20 seconds to establish a new world record.
Wow. Well, I'd like to get the rights to the reality show in which you do that. Is there a way to get that?
Stay tuned. I can send you some pictures of some prototypes at the top.
Okay, man. Thanks. All right. It's 6th Expressions in Wood Expo, Plaza Hotel and Suites, next weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Keith Jones, Chippewa Valley Woodturners Guild, thanks for being with us. Tim Heil from Minnesota. Do you consider yourself a professional woodturner, or what should I label you?
Serious hobbyist.
Serious hobbyist. Good deal. Thanks, guys, for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Al.
Thanks so much.
Well, here's a footnote for you. There's also a fine arts gallery, a silent auction, and more at next weekend's expo. And their website is cvwg.org, cvwg.org. Coming up, Jekyll and Hyde as a musical, an astronomical series at UW River Falls, and blues superstar Corky Siegel on what he loves to play and where he's going to be playing it.
Support for WPR comes from EdVest, Wisconsin's college savings plan. EdVest is a resource for Wisconsin grandparents to learn about gifting into a grandchild's college savings fund. Information is available at edvest.com or on Facebook and Twitter. Support also comes from Visit Winona, home of the Minnesota Marine Art Museum, with special collections including Picasso, Matisse, Van Gogh, Monet, Renoir, O'Keeffe, Sargent, and Homer. It's the year to discover Winona. Visit winona.com.
Spectrum West, so good to have you along. Here's a Spectrum memo. The Clear Lake Community Theater presents Over the River and Through the Woods this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That is at the Clear Lake Community Center. Don't miss it. Frederick Arts is presenting a free concert featuring the Wingra Woodwind Quintet from UW-Madison. That's next Wednesday, October 22nd, 7 p.m. at the Frederick High School Auditorium. It's free and open to the public. But audience members are encouraged to bring a non-perishable food shelf item as a donation. The website is frederickarts.org. That's F-R-E-D-E-R-I-C. That's Frederick, Wisconsin. Good organization there, as they all are in West Wisconsin. Hey, the Eau Claire Children's Theater is Jim Oliver's point of focus this week. And as usual, they're busy juggling several productions at one time. Here's Jim.
Jekyll and Hyde the Musical is a gothic romance based on the novel The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, written by Robert Louis Stevenson. The show had its world premiere run in Houston, Texas in 1990, playing to sold-out houses. And prior to opening in New York in 1997, the musical had a national tour of the United States. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will stage the show through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. Here to talk about Jekyll and Hyde the Musical is the Children's Theater's founder, executive director, and director of the show, Wayne Merrick. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So what turned you on to this show?
It's been on the kind of the list of shows to be done for a while now, actually. It just happened to be the right time of the year. Definitely an October, fall, Halloween type of show. And it hasn't been done in the area. Every season we want to make sure that there's, you know, one or two shows each season that are either new to us or new to the Chippewa Valley.
Can you define for me a gothic romance?
Well, it is classified as a gothic romance, and I think the gothic nature of it really stems from the kind of the black and white nature of the show. You have the character, you know, Dr. Jekyll and Edward Hyde. Dr. Jekyll is all good. Mr. Hyde is all evil. There are other characters in the show, upper class and the lower class. It's pretty cut and dry. Jekyll's fiance Emma, you know, represents everything that is good. Lucy represents the darker side as a lady of the night with a heart of gold. And unfortunately, tragedy strikes lots of the characters throughout the show, which is another kind of element of a gothic romance. There are are a number of murders throughout the show, none of which are very violent per se, but tragedy ensues throughout most of the show. Definitely not a happy ending, which would be another characteristic of a gothic romance, a much darker show.
Is the musical true to the Stevenson novel?
I mean, it does follow the storyline. I think everybody, whether you had to read it or not, you know, has an idea of what a Jekyll Hyde idea is. But just that concept that within each of us, you know, good and evil reside in each of us, and society would prefer that we keep our evil side in check or whatever. And the whole point of the story is that he is, you know, experimenting, and he ends up experimenting on himself with the intent of isolating the evil part of himself and trying to eliminate it. Very good intentions, that if he could separate good and evil in someone's personality, isolate it, eliminate it, and wouldn't the world be better if evil could be eliminated from many people? Obviously, his experiments go horribly wrong. He unleashes his evil side and is then unable to contain it. And that's where he kind of goes on a murder spree.
Now, I sort of remember as a child reading the classic comics version of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Is this suitable for kids?
We would advertise it as a PG-13, most likely. There's actually no language in the show. Like I said, the murders are not graphic. And that's another, the gothic romance, it's the suggestion of being murdered. It's a snapping of a neck, for example, which is not very graphic. There's no blood. There's no stabbing somebody repeatedly with a knife that you would see in a slasher movie or something. So there's none of that. But I don't think younger kids would be entertained, or maybe not follow the storyline, or wouldn't get wrapped up in the theme of the show and the dark nature. So we would say probably maybe upper middle school, but definitely high school, college, and adult.
He is Wayne Merrick, who is director of the musical Jekyll and Hyde, which is playing through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. Well, talk about who's in the cast, the principal actors.
Sure. We are actually really fortunate to have Joel Breed as the lead character. Many audiences will remember him from many shows in the area. Most recently, as Jean Valjean last fall in Les Mis with us. Couldn't have asked for a better lead character. As you might guess, that character is on stage almost the entire show, has, three quarters of the songs. Definitely very fortunate to have him in that role.
And does he have to develop two different characters?
He does. Mm-hmm. And he does that, physical characterizations between the two, a deeper, darker, more gravelly voice for Edward Hyde versus his more normal speaking voice for Dr. Jekyll. I mean, once you get through a rehearsal, it's just exhausting watching, because he is on stage so much. The transformations, the physicality, the whole nine yards. It's quite the role for a performer. There's two female leads, Aurora Kranikonde and Andrea Dorn, are playing Lucy Harris and Emma Carew. It's actually kind of a smaller cast for a musical. There's 21 in the cast, and they fill in all of the other characters, small chorus. It is certainly not your typical musical theater with lots of bright chorus numbers and singing and dancing. Virtually no dancing in the show, staging, blocking, but it is certainly not a big dance show by any means.
Is there any music that we might recognize in the show?
I think what people will take away from it is that, oh, I know that song. I didn't know it was from that show. But there are certainly some songs that have been used in competitions on, American Idol, those types of things. Mm-hmm. The one that most people will recognize is This Is the Moment, Jekyll's big anthem. But it's been sung at, the Olympics and inaugurations and, all of that kind of stuff. So that's the big song from the show. But there are a number of other songs that are probably familiar to people. They just don't realize it's from that show.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the set a little bit. Is this a pretty elaborate set?
I would say simple in its in the concept. There's a central platform, raised platform area that represents, different locations in London, his study, the lab, and, rolling set pieces that come in. Much more of a suggested set. Mm-hmm. The laboratory is the lab table. Some of the other things are a fireplace and a Victorian sofa. It's definitely meant to be a kind of a free-flowing, very character-driven, and less of the scenic and props and that kind of stuff. Fully costumed, of course, so that's kind of a fun fun costume period.
Sure.
With the, you know, Victorian 1880s costuming is kind of fun. But the set takes a back seat to the songs and mm-hmm. the characters.
You mentioned costumes and, mm-hmm. and, you know, some things are costume dramas or costume shows.
Sure.
And do you have a costume warehouse, so to speak, or do you have someone who, do you have to go out and get new costumes?
No, we've had a full-time costume designer for 25 of our 26 years. Mm-hmm. We do so many shows that we, you know, that was very important to us early on to have a costumer on staff. Mm-hmm. And over the years, of course, we've, you know, have quite a collection of costumes at our building. One whole floor of our three-story building is costume storage. Sure. So it helps to have some things to start with. You know, there were a number of costumes that were constructed just mm-hmm. for this show of that time period.
Mm-hmm. Now, getting back to the music a little bit,
sure.
the music director.
Right. And actually, the person playing Emma, Jekyll's fiance, Aurora, is our musical director.
Oh.
Dan Wanamaker, a recent university grad this spring, is our orchestra conductor. So, you know, there's a lot going on with the music. Like I said, you know, the scenic takes a little bit of a back seat, mm-hmm. And the costumes are fun.
I'm always ragging you about the number of shows you do in the course
yes.
of a year. So what's coming up?
Yeah, we're actually also in rehearsal for two other shows because, like we said, this one is definitely an adult-type show. But the week after this one you know, opens, we have Arthur's Halloween opening, which is in rehearsal now, of course. But that one, as you might guess, is just the polar opposite and is definitely for the preschool, first, second, third graders. Fourth graders, fifth graders, if you like the Arthur books or Arthur cartoons, it's Arthur's Halloween, so mm-hmm. pretty much the title tells you what the show is about.
Sure.
And then within 3 weeks, Disney's Beauty and the Beast will open at the State Theater, so we're in rehearsals for that as well. So, mm-hmm. We've got an adult show, a younger kids show, and then definitely a show for the entire family. Really, within a month, there's going to be a show that you will kind of appeal to your family or that you can catch.
How about a holiday? Is there a holiday show coming?
Well, and then right after Beauty and the Beast, 2 weeks after that, our holiday show this year is Alora Ingalls Wilder Christmas, which once again would be a family show mm-hmm. as well.
Well, I suspect we'll talk to you again sometime before the first of the year, so we'll find out what's happening after.
Sounds good.
Okay. Well, we've been visiting with Wayne Merrick, who's director of Jekyll and Hyde, the musical. The Eau Claire Children's Theater production will run through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. Wayne Merrick, thanks so much for being with
thank
us.
Thank you.
And thank you, Jim Oliver. Astronomy for the whole family in River Falls and blues guy Corky Siegel waiting in the wings here on Spectrum West. Spectrum Memo, this Friday and Saturday and Sunday, enjoy the 7th Earth Arts Fall Salon Art Exhibit Reflections at the Cafe Wren Community Room in Luck, Wisconsin. Their website is earthartswi.org. Saturday night, Theater in the Woods celebrates 25 years with 25 plays in 25 minutes, 7 p.m. at the Erica Quam Memorial Theater. Saturday, it's a gala preview concert prior to the upcoming concert season at the Northern Lakes Center for the Arts in Amory, 7:30 p.m. NorthernLakesCenter.org is their website. Phone number is 268-6811. Well, as you may or may not know, we record our conversations with guests usually just a couple days before the program actually airs on Thursdays and repeated on Fridays, except for this week, as I said. Consequently, we have the ability to edit these conversations, and that makes us all sound as if we consistently have every thought and every reaction calculated and under control. Although, this is how things typically begin. Not always smooth on my part, I had contacted Dr. Arlene Koronick of the UW-River Falls Physics Department to talk about their new First Mondays Under the Dome planetarium presentations, which began this month. We'll segue into a meaningful conversation, although my apparatus ignorance comes through as well. But this is how it all began, you see. This is the opening year for the... is there anything else I should know before I begin?
No, I don't think so.
That you know of, the meaning of life or any of that?
Oh, no. The meaning of life. Well, sure, yes. Let's talk about that first.
I figure if anybody knows it, a physics professor can. I mean,
the meaning of life is physics. There you go.
Yeah, and I was never good at that, so that's why I go through life confused. Well, as I said, this is the opening year of First Mondays Under the Dome. Tell us about the process that determined the project. Did you have input from people? Was this asked for? Did you say to yourselves, this is good for our relationship with the community? What's the genesis of this?
Well, we've had a planetarium here at the university since 1969.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to have a projector that it was state-of-the-art for the time, made by the Spitz Company, which was a big iron ball that had holes poked into it. And there was a light on the inside of it. You turned it on, and the light leaked out and projected the night sky onto the ceiling.
Ah.
And people loved that, and it was beautiful. But about a year and a half ago, through the Ice Cube project that the University of River Falls was a part of, we got a brand-new digital projector, which now allows us to show the sky digitally in just so much more beauty, so we can see the constellations. But now we're also able to digitally fly up off the surface of the Earth, take a look at the Earth from space, fly around our solar system, fly all the way out to the edge of our galaxy, out to the edge of the universe. And I've been doing these new programs, new digital programs, mostly for school groups and scout groups. And every time someone would come, they would say, "Is this ever going to be open to the public?" And we really didn't have a mechanism in place to do that before. Since more people were asking about it, I thought, well, let's try this. We'll do the first Monday of the month, see if there's any interest. So we're going to be doing little bite-sized pieces rather than a full-blown hour-long show like I would normally do for a school group.
Sure.
We're going to take just subsets of that and present that to the public on the first Monday.
Man, if I lived in River Falls, I'd be there. So hopefully people will respond. Is there a short layman's way of describing to us the technology that allows you to project, you know, things on the ceiling? Is that's actually the telescope itself bringing it in?
Not a telescope. It's actually a projector like any other kind of, you know, it's a slide projector of a sort, you know, but it's better than that. So we can put in digital images, any kind that we want.
Ah.
And there is software now that takes that and morphs the image a little bit so that it actually molds to the ceiling so that you get that sort of curved effect. It makes it look a little more 3D.
Uh-huh. I always thought planetariums had telescopes.
Planetarium is for looking at the pretend night sky, basically. But we do have an observatory as well, and we do have real telescopes for looking at the real night sky.
So I got observatory and planetarium mixed up.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that wouldn't be the first time that I had things mixed up. Okay, so I'm going to put observatory and... Anything more you want to tell us about that Ice Cube project? That sounded interesting.
Well, the Ice Cube project last year was just named as the breakthrough project of the year in science. There are detectors in the ice at the South Pole.
Mm-hmm.
I think at last count, I believe there are 86 strings with several hundred detectors along each string going down into the ice, which is exceptionally clear and pure down at the South Pole. So they can hold on to these detectors. And they're looking for neutrinos, which are massless particles that are produced from all kinds of cosmic reactions. There are neutrinos coming off of the sun. Those are not the ones they're interested in. So they're using the Earth itself as a kind of screen to only catch those very high-energy neutrinos that are coming from very distant, very exciting cosmic events.
Wow. How long have you been a physics professor?
I've been a physics professor about 15 years. I was a high school teacher.
You were? Okay. And I was asking because I have to believe your science, even in the 15 years you've been engaged on the college level, has changed a lot. People in the private sector, they have to go to seminars, get themselves into today's technology, today's knowledge, today's revelations. Is that something that you guys have to do as well? Do you have to recertify? What do you have to do to keep up with everything that's coming at you, which has to be a lot?
Well, it's not exactly recertifying, but we go to conventions, we participate in research, we share our research with other people. So we try to keep growing just because it's something we're interested in.
Is the teaching of physics the same as it was 40 years ago?
Oh, no, it's changed quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There's still some traditional lecture classes, but here at the university, we've just started this. It's just constructed last year, a brand new space called an active learning classroom, where instead of having the teacher stand up in front of everybody, the sort of shorthand is to be the sage on the stage. Instead of having someone standing up and just talking at students, instead the students are grouped. There are three students who work together at a computer station or a project, and then those three are put into a group of nine, and they're gathered around a very large computer screen so they can share their data with the rest of the room. And so it's learning by actively participating in physics instead of just talking about, you know, this is what you should learn, go home and memorize it. This is now, let's try it out. Let's see what really happens when gravity is acting. Let's see what really happens when there's this much friction.
Sure. Sounds like a lot less students nodding off.
That's true. They must stay engaged. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, lecture halls used to be good for that. On the phone with us, Eileen Koronek. She's a professor in the physics department and the planetarium director at the University of Wisconsin, River Falls. We're talking about First Mondays Under the Dome. These are planetarium presentations. There has already been one. There's one coming up on the 3rd of November, and then every month through May, except for January. I was surprised to see the presentations you alluded to are only 30 minutes long. That has to be challenging for you to impart information designed to make sense to people like us in 30 minutes.
Well, it's a good challenge, though, because otherwise I, like many professors, would probably have a tendency to drone on and on. And since I've limited myself to 30 minutes, I really hit the high points and what I hope will be highlights that are of interest to people.
Mm-hmm. Now, the first year, the first season, let's call it, going to focus on astronomy. Other disciplines I've read will be in coming years. Like what? What other disciplines might there be?
We're hoping to start to infuse some art. There are some art galleries that are actually photographing their collections and then, as I said earlier, morphing them to be able to fit onto a curved screen for projection. One of the places that's done that already is the Vatican, where they have taken high-resolution images of the Sistine Chapel. They have morphed it into this correct projection mode. And so when we put that onto our, and this is free. These are images that are available for free.
Sure.
We can project them onto our dome, and we can now fly in as close as we want to, closer than you could in the Sistine Chapel itself.
Wow.
Fly in as close as you want to see those images right up close. So eventually we'd like to introduce some things like visual art. One of our people on staff, Arity Lowell, is working with the digital film and television department, hoping to have those students get really excited about filming some things around campus, for example,
mm-hmm.
and then being able to show a day in the life of a student at River Falls, but in projection mode.
That's cool. That's very cool. Well, you know, for someone like me who did not do very well in the sciences years ago, this is a little bit of keeping a promise to myself to talk to more people who are scientists and physics department and chemistry and biology and all that stuff. So, you know, thanks for spending time with me because I feel like I learned a lot more than maybe what I did in 4 years of high school. I don't know. So the first Mondays Under the Dome are free, as you said earlier, and open to the public. I don't know if you said it was free, but you said it was open to the public.
It is free and it is open to the public.
Okay. And these start at 7 o'clock at the
That's
planetarium.
Correct.
And the planetarium on the campus is where?
It's located in the Agricultural Sciences Building, which is about one block south into campus from the corner of 3rd Street and Cascade Avenue.
Very good. Thanks for that. Are you a doctor?
Well, I'm a doctor of physics.
Yes, okay. Well, then I'll call you. Dr. Koronek, thanks so much for being with us here on Spectrum West. I appreciate it.
And thank you for your time.
As you can tell, I'm no Da Vinci. Fairly proficient at arts and music. Science, not very much. Contact UW River Falls for your seat at these interesting First Mondays Under the Dome. Longtime blues icon Corky Siegel will talk about his career and provide samples of what he's bringing to Ladysmith next on Spectrum West.
Support for WPR comes from the Bergstrom Mahler Museum of Glass in Neenah, presenting Beauty Beyond Nature, the glass art of Paul Stankard, through February 15th. More information at bmmglass.com. Support also comes from the UW-Eau Claire Department of Music and Theater Arts, demonstrating the violence that stems from forced silence in its production, The Love of the Nightingale, through October 26th at Riverside Theater. Tickets at 800-949-UWEC.
Hey, if you have nothing on your calendar Friday evening, October 24th, I recommend you keep it open for at least the next few minutes. I'll have more details shortly. It's been said the harmonica is to blues what the saxophone is to jazz. In the world of blues harp players, better yet, in the world of real good blues harp players, there are some who stand out. Sonny Boy Williamson, Little Walter, Junior Wells, James Cotton, Charlie Musselwhite, Paul Butterfield, John Mayall, and more. I respectfully submit the name Corky Siegel, not solely because of his prowess, which is enough, but because of the nurturing spirit he's displayed as a caregiver for the instrument and the genre. Corky's been the doting father, encouraging the blues harp, once the shy child reluctant to play with other kids on the block, to not only leave the house and meet those other kids, but lead them in playing together and enjoying exciting new times. Starting as a young musician, he would seek places to play with friend and guitarist Jim Schwall. They found a place in South Chicago, Pepper's Lounge. They became the popular Siegel Schwall Band, and music simply became a playground from there. I'm like a kid in a candy shop, although today I suppose the analogy might be a kid in a video game shop. Because Corky Siegel is the Captain Kangaroo of blues harp players for people of my generation. Who inspired you as a harmonica player? When did you first? Because you started, you played the sax, you play the piano. Why the harmonica?
Well, I would say, you know, Bob Dylan, and I thought, wow, what a cool instrument. And I was playing tenor saxophone at the time, and I thought, well, this is dumb, carrying this big thing around. Harmonica fits in my pocket. Then a friend came over with some blues records, Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf, Jimmy Reed, and I heard the harmonica on there. And I had heard it before, I just never really noticed it like that, and I went, wow.
A lot of times when I talk with people, whether they're artists or teachers or musicians or whatever, we get into how technology has changed what they do. And I know back when you first started, did you have to do the whole thing with soaking your harmonicas to get the wood right? They were wood at one time.
Well, yeah. I mean, they still have the wooden ones.
They do, okay.
But back then, no, I wouldn't. Everyone soaked them. I didn't get that. Sort of lubricated the reeds so it was, like, easier to play, but I never soaked them. I tried to keep them dry because the wood expanding would kill my lips because it would expand out from the harmonica.
I always thought that
they tell you not to.
They tell you not to do that now?
They. You know who they is?
No.
Everyone who is not us.
I'm going to remember
that. That's what we listen to.
I always heard when I had a few harmonicas that always helped you bend notes, but I guess that's not the case because you were bending them dry, huh?
Yeah, well, it acted as a lubrication to the reed, so everything was, like, slightly easier for a while. But, no.
So let's trek back south side of Chicago. You had a hunger for playing, you and Jim Schwall on guitar. You talked in a video that I saw about how you'd go to Pepper's Show Lounge. And,
right.
You finally got to play after begging them, I guess. Every Thursday night you were a hit, huh?
Actually, never begged them. We were too naive to do something like that. We just walked in and said, could we play here? And they said, audition, and we went, okay. And then Johnny Pepper said, okay, we'd like you to play every Thursday night.
Cool.
We were a two-man band, drums under the piano and everything like that, and a one-man, two-man band, you might say.
Wow.
And he didn't want us to do that. He said, I'm going to hire you a bass player and a drummer. So every Thursday night, we had a different bass player and a drummer from one of the other groups, like Howlin' Wolf's group or Muddy's group, and then all these people would come and sit in, like Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf and Willie Dixon and Hound Dog Taylor and Little Walter. And
you brought up another name in the video I saw. That was Buddy Guy.
And Buddy Guy and Junior Wells and James Cotton.
Buddy Guy is playing in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, the same night that you're playing 60 miles north in Ladysmith.
Wow, pretty cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
You played the piano back then. Did you play the harmonica as well?
I didn't play either well. No, I played both harmonica and piano and sang.
That's Corky Siegel on the phone with us, harmonica player. He's now involved and has been for a number of years, more years than I was aware of. Chamber Blues, it's called. And they're coming up Friday, October 24th, to northern Wisconsin. Flambeau Valley Arts Association is bringing them in. The story goes, Corky, that one night, Seiji Ozawa, the legendary conductor, approached you about performing with the Chicago Symphony. Do you remember your thoughts after he left that night? Do you remember thinking, wow, where did that come from? Or were collaborations just natural for you, and you said, yeah, why not?
He used to come in night after night after night after night. He became a really big fan of Siegel Schwall. And one night, like you said, he asked my band could jam with his band being the Chicago Symphony. My thoughts were, again, the naivety was infinite. I just thought, well, yeah, you know, that'd be really great. And William Russo, we got a composer, and Seiji Ozawa and I got together, and they proposed to me. They said, how are we going to do this? And I said, well, we'll start with Charles Ives and take it from there. And Charles Ives, as composer, did a piece called Music for Two Marching Bands. And basically, it's two marching bands playing at different tempos, different pieces, in different keys. So I said, we could start there. And I said, but let's make sure we do this fearlessly and not worry about trying to please anybody, but just make sure we use this this medium to explore the possibilities of how to actually juxtapose the two. So we could use a classical ostinato with a blues melody, a blues ostinato with a classical melody. So right now there's three different ways of approaching it. And now we'll come up with more. All the possible ideas were laid out, and William Russo did a brilliant job of putting it all together.
Yeah, you use the word juxtapose. You use that to describe blues and classical, and you don't use terms like mixing or blending because you contend they don't. They just simply, what, go together like chips and salsa?
Yeah, the mission and the focus wasn't to mix or blend the two. That's already been done. Jazz is a blend of blues and classical. That's a blend. Jazz was created out of the blend of blues and classical. What we're trying to do, what we tried to do there, and what I'm trying to do always in chamber blues, is come up with different ways of juxtaposing the two, which means where you can actually hear the blues, there it is, you can hear the classical, there it is, and they're working together to create a new experience. Not a new genre, there are two genres happening at the same time.
Baby, before it's too late. And that's the last time I eat your angel food cake. Your angel food cake. Your angel food cake. I was just sitting at the table enjoying. Oh, yeah.
Were there those who rebelled? Were there those who doubted that it worked?
Until they heard it.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I remember an article in Atlantic Magazine saying that blues and classical could never, ever work together. And they based it on a concert, and they said it was an utter failure. You know, it was horrible, and for all these reasons, and the balance was off, and this was off, and you know, it just can't be done. They didn't know about my work that I've been doing for years, and this was like in the 80s someone tried to do this, and they didn't even know that in the 60s I was juxtaposing blues and classical with great success and getting invitations from every major symphony all over the world. Played the New York Philharmonic and the Boston Symphony and all the other symphonies. It was a great success. Two different recordings on Deutsche Grammophon.
Yeah, when they want you, you know the classical people are accepting you.
Yeah, exactly. I remember the concert at the New York Philharmonic. We had four nights and they added a fifth night. When we got on stage, it was 1969. You know, we had our long hair and everything. The audience booed and hissed us. But by the time the concert was over, it was like the head of the symphony administration said, it was the most intense standing ovation he had ever heard in Lincoln Center. The only other experience he had like that was with a concert from Caruso.
Ooh, man.
And I was just, you know, 21 and you know, a young musician, and I thought, wow.
And everybody accepted you as a blues musician. You didn't come out the first night or any subsequent nights, you know, in a tuxedo, did you?
No, not at all.
You formed the concept that you're in now in 83, yes?
Right. That's when I started writing chamber blues, and I thought people were going to hate it. I thought the critics, it would be like me walking around with a target on my back. But the reason I did it is because I wanted to do it, not because I was trying to please anyone. It was just, I was just driven to do it. I just fell in love.
When, sure.
You know, I was head over heels in love. The quote that we used is outrageous fun.
And you contend that this music pursues you rather than the other way around. That's cool.
Well, it did pursue me up until 83, and then when I fell in love, I haven't left it alone.
Ah.
As I tell people, you know, it was neither my idea nor my fault, but it's dirty work and somebody has to do it.
Now, we're talking to you, Corky Siegel, because you are legendary, but I have to say that the five other members of your group are getting to be legendary in their own right, too. I mean, these are some wonderful, wonderful young musicians.
Yeah, yeah, they really are. Well, first of all, Frankie Donaldson, our percussionist and tabla player, played with Ramsey Lewis for about 16 years.
Ah.
So, you know, he's like a jazz guy, and he's been around. The string players are so exceptional and so much in demand. It's really hard for us to get together and rehearse, record, or anything because everyone's schedules.
Hey, a general question. I've always wondered this because I dabble in the harmonica. Every time I do, I get dizzy. I'm thinking that playing the harmonica is good aerobics, is it?
Well, they're saying now, they're giving harmonicas to patients that have breathing problems.
Ah, sure.
They're just handing them harmonicas. The day I walk on that stage, right about as I walk on the stage in Ladysmith, I will be turning from a 70-year-old to a 71-year-old, beginning my 72nd year on the face of this earth.
Really? Your birthday?
Yeah.
On Friday?
Yeah.
Get out of town. Wow.
No, I'm just coming into town, actually.
Yes, well, I don't think people will let you out of town after you play. Cause there's a lot of people looking forward to your appearance, and I have to say the Flambeau Valley Arts Association deserves some kudos for the ability to bring such an iconic musical aggregation to Ladysmith, Wisconsin. I'm proud of them.
And they also win the Chamby Award for fearlessness in programming. The fearlessness from us, from me, comes from just writing things that I love, and the tool of fearlessness allows me to do that. That's what people want. They want the artist to do what they love, so the artist is connected.
Often, if you do, do you partake of just some down and dirty blues with some old blues masters? You still make time for that, don't you?
Well, you know, sometimes they come and sit in with me.
Cool.
That's what happens. Otis Clay actually came and sat in. Some of the younger guys, like Sugar Blue, has sat in with us a couple times. James Cotton, and we were in the Montreal Jazz Festival. He came and sat in with us. And, you know, I have pieces written so that the blues masters could actually come and sit in with us.
Thanks for spending time with us. We appreciate it.
And I'm really looking forward to meeting the audience.
CorkyMusic.com is the place to learn more about this gentleman that we've been talking with.
That's a good website to go to, yes.
Yeah. Thanks.
Okay, Alan. Thanks so much.
Corky Siegel, Chamber Blues. They're coming next Friday, October 24th, Ladysmith High School Auditorium, 7:30 p.m., an event in the Flambeau Valley Arts Association series. The website is fvaa.weebly.com. Let's listen.
Women, I don't know which way to jump. is flip, flop, and fly. Don't care if I die. Is flip, flop, and fly. Don't care if I die. Don't never leave me. Don't you never say goodbye. Bye-bye.
The voice of legendary Sam Lay.
Here's what's on stage in Western Wisconsin theater venues. The Menominee Theater Guild will present On Golden Pond through Sunday at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee. The show will run through October 26th. The Love of the Nightingale, a production of the University of Wisconsin Eau Claire, will play tonight, Thursday, through Saturday, and the following Wednesday through Sunday at the Riverside Theater in the Haas Fine Arts Center at the University. The Northern Star Theater Company of Rice Lake will present MASH tonight, Thursday, Friday, and Sunday. There's no Saturday performance. The University of Wisconsin River Falls Masters will present a student-directed production of Reckless. The show runs through Saturday and next Thursday through Saturday at the Blanche Davis Theater, located in the Kleinpel Fine Arts Building at the University. Jekyll and Hyde, the musical, a production of the Eau Claire Children's Theater, will play through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. The Festival Theater of St. Croix Falls will present The Miser through Sunday. The play will run weekends through October 26th. The Mystery Cafe production of Murder, She Tweeted will play Friday and Saturday at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. The show will play Fridays and Saturdays through November 1st. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. For Spectrum West, I am Jim Oliver.
Thank you, sir. Spectrum Memo, UW-Barron County Music Department's created a new concert series, the Steinway Concert Series, to celebrate their restored Steinway piano. Opening the series is the UW Superior Vocal Trio, Saturday evening, 7:30, in the UWBC Fine Arts Theater in Rice Lake. Hey, next week is National Friends of Libraries Week. Special activities, visit your local library. Go ahead. That wraps up another real enjoyable Spectrum West episode. Thanks, Lauren Segrin, Tiffany Coggins, and all of you for making Spectrum West possible and accepted. Next week, affordable solar energy gets its day. John Cranford comes home to entertain. Eau Claire Jazz plans a huge new gala and more. I'm Al Ross. See you next week.